Hello and welcome to episode 103 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. Be sure to check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles with Round the Clock customer service. My name is Connor, I'm the host and editor for the podcast, joined as I am always by my two co-hosts, Nathaniel from Card Hoarder and Dave C. from Ireland. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, going pretty well, thanks, Connor.
Good here. Just got back from vacation, so I'm still feeling that. Well, I quickly got into like some argument with the bank yesterday, so it like evaporated all my good feelings from vacation, but I'm not going to let that drag me down. So I'm feeling good. Rested and had a lot to drink while I was away, so feeling good.
Yeah, I was going to say another vacation, but you warned me about that.
Another vacation. You know, you got to rest. You got to get some R&R here and there, you know?
I do know. I'm finally taking a vacation of sorts myself, going to SCGCon, so I'm really excited
nice.
About that.
Very
gonna
cool.
be really fun to see all my old friends and coworkers from SCG, so can't wait for that.
The end of the month?
It's this weekend.
Oh, it's this weekend. Wow, okay. So it's coming right up then.
Super exciting. It's going to be really cool to see some coverage of that, I think.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, there's the no ban list modern. I can't remember if vintage or pop are going to get any coverage. I don't think so. I think it's the invitational and no ban list modern, I think, are the two.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. But we had a lot of cool things to talk about this week. We had Pro Tour Dominaria. There's a lot to talk about that. And then there's some Arena and Magic Island news that we'll talk about later on. So let's start with the Pro Tour Dominaria. Wyatt Darby. I love that name. It's very, it's not like a Western sounding name, Wyatt. It's a Wyatt Earp. Yeah, I think that's it. So Wyatt Darby won the tournament with mono red in an exciting, decisive game 5. Now, in the show notes, I pose the question, what's wrong with the Pro Tour? Because not that I think the Pro Tour was like a complete failure, at least this one in particular, or if there was like anything lacking, because I personally didn't feel too excited about this tournament. Of course, there are like a few factors that are pretty obvious, like including, for me, the weather was just super nice this weekend, so I set a part of it outside. So I was just like, nah, I don't need to watch the Pro Tour. I'm just going to go enjoy the nice weather. So do either of you agree with me and think there's something wrong with the Pro Tour? If so, like, what do you think the key factor is?
I completely agree with you. One, I am completely the same about the weather. I stop caring about Magic completely in the summer. In the winter, I'm a complete bear. I want to be inside. I don't like the bad weather, and I'll play lots of games. I am not playing much Magic in my spare time at the moment. I'm spending time with my girlfriend and outside all the time. It's pretty great. A little secret. I don't think we can let the other nerds know. It's pretty great. But it is this massive amount of time we had before the Pro Tour. I thought pros would break it. And I thought the cards were powerful enough that there'd be a broken deck somewhere there and it would be cool. But there's no chance of that. And this could have just been a Modo PTQ with the decks that showed up, to be honest. They were a little better tuned. They were a little better tested. But altogether, they're not that different to what was showing up on Modo week in and week out. And that's incredibly boring and not how you sell your new cards.
I agree that the distance and time distance here did not seem to work very well. Sounded pretty boring. I think that you've seen that the set is kind of lackluster or maybe the design fell a little short because I know there was talk about that one card, I think it's Chain Whirler or something like that, Goblin Chain Whirler. You know, I think it's sort of more of the same from what we've seen. And I think it's partly that Standard is not that interesting, although it sounds like it's not as bad, but just still, you know, I don't think I didn't hear anything that it was bad, and I didn't really watch any of it myself. I sort of watched on Twitter, if you will, but it just sounded like, whatever, Pro Tour, no big deal. When in reality, we all want it to be a huge deal and important like other esports. So,
right. I think that's where I'm coming from because I'm used to when I got back into the game, every Pro Tour was the most exciting weekend of my life, which sounds pretty sad.
No, that's all right.
You know what I mean? Like,
I
was like, I remember having band practice and I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to have the Pro Tour on in the background. Like, I need to see what's going on. So that's a part of it. Yeah, I don't know if I buy into the narrative of the metagame really making it that boring. I mean, obviously, that was another reason why I didn't tune in, because it was like, oh, a lot of red cards. I mean, the decks were a little bit different. I don't know if I buy into Goblin Chain Whirler being a huge mistake. I don't like the card design that much, but I think there's room for innovation here still.
I think the metagame is fine, as in if it didn't change for the next couple months, it would be boring. But none of these decks are broken. None of these decks have like toxic kind of gameplay or gameplay patterns. They're all fine decks, and there's three to four decks, possibly only three. And it's a bit like when Mono Black Devotion was the best deck. It's not broken, but it's not that much fun, and you're going to be repetitively playing the same three matchups over and over again. And that's what this seems like. Chain Whirler isn't a problem. I don't think the card's going to be banned. Why Chain Whirler is bad? So Frost Dawn, I still think, is the better card, and it's just kind of broken. It was just a card that basically had the text on it: your bad matchups are now good matchups for the red deck. And that was awful, and it made a very powerful red deck almost unbeatable in a metagame. Goblin Chain Whirler does something different. It says certain creatures are no longer playable. And that's really boring. That's really restrictive. You have these cool decks made up. There's multiple tokens in the last couple sets. And I remember when the set first hit Dominaria, there was multiple tokens decks that were doing well. And then people start playing Chain Whirler, and that goes away. You know, we're talking Glintsleeve Siphoner being one of the most powerful cards in Standard for a while. And now there's this super efficient answer to it. You do not want your 2-drop dying to Chain Whirler. You don't want to make multiple tokens. And putting restrictions on deck building like that makes for boring Magic. Sometimes it's fine. Sometimes there has to be certain threats in the metagame where you go, well, you have to play answers to this. But when it's a creature that invalidates a bunch of other creatures, I think that stifles deck building, which isn't fun, but isn't too powerful.
I think that given the recent history with where Standard has been and the bans, I mean, I would agree people are always going to start calling for bans no matter what. It seems like it just sort of seems to be where the community goes when they see something they don't like. But even if you, like Connor, don't think that it needs to be banned, the fact that the discussion could be had, I think it's just not where they want Standard to be, and not where... Ultimately, I think that this is a bad place to be following everything that's happened in the last, what's it been, 2 years maybe, for Standard, when it's the big flagship, and it's not great. Like, I think it needs to be great, not fine. And I think it at best is probably fine. Maybe some people think it's good, but I think mm-hmm. we need great now, and I don't think we have it.
Yeah, I agree. So there's a few things in here. So I mean, what's the real problem here? It's probably just Kaladesh. I know Safronov has been tweeting. If it was just one tweet, he should just keep doing it, is how many days until Kaladesh rotates out. Because a card that we haven't mentioned yet is Scrapheap Scrounger. There was a really interesting tweet that somebody sent out that cards that have put 24-plus copies in multiple PT Top 8s. We have Wasteland, Grim Monolith, Rashad and Port. I mean, those are all notoriously broken cards. In Magic history. And Scrounger is now on that list, which is just fascinating to me. Because when you think of this card, it's like, I see a just giant leap in power level between these cards. But yeah, colorless card, just that's kind of what Standard's been like in the past couple of years. So I kind of agree with Nathaniel. But I do think it's more the schedule too. I'm sure a lot of people don't mind as much having this much more time to play Magic online, because I'm sure Numont the Nummy, who we'll talk about in a little bit, he didn't have to be on a testing team. He could just play Magic online for 5 weeks or whatever it was, and then he actually had a decent record at the Pro Tour. So I'm sure if he tried to do that in if it's like 1 or 2 weeks with Magic online, I'm sure those results may have not been the same without testing with a huge team. So I think there's a little bit of some of that. Like I said, or I tried to point out in the beginning, there's a lot of factors that are coming together with this kind of decreased interest in the Pro Tour. To me, it feels like it should be this big thing, but it hasn't been trending upward, in my opinion.
Well, you use that word a lot of time, big thing. You've used that phrase a lot, big thing, and that's an issue here. You didn't have to watch the Pro Tour now. You know, if I had an event next week, I didn't have to watch the Pro Tour and see what decks were doing best, because they're the same decks that have done great since the set released. They're the same decks that big streamers are playing every week, you know? So there wasn't any onus on someone that was on the fence, you know, will I go out and have a nice day, go for a walk somewhere, or will I watch the Pro Tour? There wasn't much onus. I was way more interested in Dominaria draft than Standard once I saw, you know, they do the Standard breakdowns of what decks are being played. And I was just like, oh, well, I'm way more interested in the draft because it's a decent draft format. And they kind of screwed that up, in my opinion, but we'll get that to a second. And there was just no win. I've seen these matchups play 100 times. I don't care if they're the best players in the world. I've seen it 1,000,000 times before already. I will give one upside to it. I think some of the production values got a bit better.
Do you like the zoom in cam?
I don't think that was used properly a lot of the time.
No, I didn't like it.
At least they're trying something, and that maybe...
Sure.
It's teething, you know, they're not used to that equipment, they don't know the best way to use it. But we've said they should have different camera angles and stuff for matches for a long time. Doesn't make much sense. Worlds was the big one where there was shine on the table and they had no way to fix it because they had fixed cameras. So now they don't have fixed cameras and maybe that's not going to be an issue.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, that might be hopeful thinking, but maybe hopefully this shows that a little bit.
Yeah, in general, you can't really say anything about the production of, because I know we've had complaints about that, but yeah, I don't think that was the problem really here.
No.
Although not featuring Kenji, I think was a problem. I'm talking about Kenji Numata Nami. Rich Hagen did give like a nice transparent answer on Twitter, although I really don't agree with him. What he said was that with literally the two best 200 players in the world, not showing any of them against a first starter would be a massive fail. Not sure how featuring possibly the greatest of all time over a first timer is pretty out of touch, especially as well, we all know Kendry. And listen, I'm fine with not showing his draft. Whatever. So they showed Luis Scott Vargas his draft. Okay. My problem is you have Kenji in the backup feature match against a Hall of Famer. You just said, we want to show the best players in the world. Okay. You have a best player in the world here. I don't care about Owen Turtenwald. He's going to show up later on. You're going to show him like a million other times on the feature match. Top 8's another Pro Tour. Great. And who do you play? Random player. I'm sorry, whoever you played against in that feature match. So I don't understand why we didn't take that opportunity to feature it. Because obviously, he had like an average record the rest of the way. And you're not going to be able to feature him. Fine. It's draft. That's a good time to show people. When in Constructed, you want to take in the fact of, okay, are these players playing interesting decks? That you can balance here. But when it's draft, find the good story. Find the good players here. So I thought that was a huge punt.
I think it's one of the biggest mistakes they've made in coverage. Like, purposely, not like something going wrong, not production values, not a random commentator that maybe didn't work out. There is going to be 1 million John Finkel and LSV drafts to cover as your first draft. There's going to be 1 million of them. These guys will not stop playing Magic. They've shown no signs of ever wanting to stop playing the game, and they will have another 100 Pro Tours between them, and they'll have a bunch of Pro Tour top 8s and have fantastic careers. There's only ever going to be the first draft for Kenji and the closing of his 5 or 6 year story in Magic. You had a big chance to finish that guy's story. He has a lot of followers. If you don't follow him, you know who he is. And if you don't know who he is, it takes a couple sentences from the commentators. This is Kenji Egashira. He's been trying to make the Pro Tour for years. He's come so close on stream. You can go watch streams where he loses when he's getting close. He's top 8ed multiple PTQs, and he is one of the biggest Twitch content makers in the world. This is the end of his story arc. Let's see how he does. That's all you have to do.
Against the Hall of Famer. What a great story.
Yeah, you could do it against the Hall of Fame. Like, that was big. I think you have to cover his draft, but it almost felt like they were spiting us. They're like, well, take that chat. We're not going to show you him at that moment in the tournament as well. There was just so much wrong with it, and it's so out of touch. And I had multiple arguments with friends. Sorry I'm ranting a bit, but do they really think that many people, there's going to be that much of a difference in viewership between LSV drafting and Kenji? Is that really what they think those couple of thousand people are there for? You know, is anyone watching going, oh, it's Kenji, I'm logging off. That's terrible. Viewership in half, not a chance.
I think this is a pretty unique situation, too. It's weird that he uses the language of first-timer. We've been waiting for this player. We've been waiting for this anticipation. So not getting the payoff feels kind of... It's sad.
I don't even follow him that much. And I felt sad not seeing his draft. I felt incomplete.
See, I followed him since, not day one, but like early on in his... year stream challenge. I followed him pretty much from the beginning year and pretty much until this point.
I think that Rich's comment sort of shows a fundamental misunderstanding about what the Pro Tour should be and what will garner. I mean, Magic, the game, has its drawbacks when it comes to viewership. If you can't take obvious storylines like this and turn them into interest and excitement from people, and if you think that the only thing that's exciting is like Hall of Fame players and people that constantly win, then I think they're misunderstanding what the Pro Tour is. So I mean, again, I didn't watch it. When you just read that tweet, like, I just shaking my head here, thinking that sounds exactly like Rich, you know? It sounds exactly like something he would say and something he would think, and I think it's wrong. I think it's straight up incorrect. That is what needs to be, it certainly is showcased and needs to be showcased at the Pro Tour, but I think there's ways to do it and there's ways to make things exciting and there's ways to not sort of discount someone that has, you know, has never been there before. I think that coverage does discount that, and I think it's kind of insulting. So anyway, I think there's a way that sports make rookies interesting and storylines that people will find more relatable probably in certain cases. So definitely a missed opportunity. I think they need to revisit that sort of attitude about what needs to be showcased and the types of storylines they want to follow at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, and we can get a little bit into just the system of how to get to the Pro Tour, because I think that's an important thing. And you kind of mentioned rookies and sports. I just think about poker and the moneymaker effect. The way they created this moneymaker situation, they covered him. Now, obviously, with that was edited in post-production. So they had a little bit of an advantage there. But you want that feeling of, oh, anybody can make it to the Pro Tour. Anybody can win type of feeling. And yeah, they did interview Kenji, so there was at least something. But still, it's not, you don't get the satisfaction of watching the player and having a fun story about it. Kenji can talk about it on the stream. Oh, this is what I was thinking during this match. We don't really get that much of it. Now he's just gonna, oh, this is what happened in the match. You didn't get to see it. Sorry. It was a great match. Who knows? I don't even know if it was. I don't even know who won. So that's
but someone you want to root for, though. Like if they show that and then they show him playing, and you want to root for him, you want to stay and watch, is he going to win? And just this, you know, this first round or whatever, it's that kind of excitement that needs to be there, I think, to grow viewership.
Right. And I mean, there's other players that have been there for the first time, and you know, the top two people in the finals, they weren't with a team or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, so there's a little bit of that, but yeah, there's definitely disconnect, and there's definitely a disconnect with the whole PTQ system and PPTQ system, RPTQ, which has been, I don't know. It sounds like it's been terrible. Dave, I'm going to toss it over to you, because I'm not sure if people are just complaining because they like to complain about stuff. I know there's been problems with attendance, or not attendance, tournaments getting capped, I think, is the problem. Is that correct?
Yeah, essentially what has happened, and we've been saying this for a while, is this whole Team Pro Tour is a bit short-sighted, not because of the concept of a Team Pro Tour, which is a good concept, because they didn't think of the year building up to it, I think, too much. They've oversaturated Team GPs, but the qualifying for this was through single PTQs sometimes, for the RPTQs. And what that meant, and what silver and bronze status means, is that one qualified person can bring two unqualified people to the RPTQ. Which means the numbers have exploded. There are an immensely large amount of teams going to this. I'm bringing two unqualified people because they're my good friends. But firstly, I went through the process of, you know, I want to get to people way, way, way better than me. If I can't get them, I'm going to bring two Irish people. And I think the majority of people qualified did that. And it's led to capacity being hit on capacities that TOs didn't think could be hit. Capacities that haven't come close to being hit in other RPTQs, so they thought they were safe. The English one was full, and they've only extended capacity to try and fit a couple of the English and Irish teams that were missing, pretty much, not out of the goodness of the heart, they're going to make some money off of it, but pretty much because the TO said, well, it seems really unfair that English and Irish teams aren't going to get to go to their RPTQ. So it's a complete cluster, and it started in America. There was, like, I can't remember which American one, but there was an American one. It was in Nashville, and apparently there wasn't another RPTQ that close to it. So some people were just like, well, I guess I can't go to an RPTQ anymore because I'm not paying a plane ticket. Three people are not paying plane tickets plus accommodation for it. So they've messed up. There's nothing really that's going to be done. I feel really bad for people who aren't qualified and a friend was bringing them, because they won't get any compensation. The person qualified might get to defer their invite to the next batch. But besides that, there's not much they can do. And this time, I rag on TOs a lot, but I don't think this time it's the TO's fault. I think this is really short-term planning by Wizards. It's exasperated a lot by the fact that there are less slots as well. Only two teams qualify from each slot, so six people from each slot, which is seems normal, but there's like way more people than average going. And the two online ones aren't there anymore. So the two online ones, which used to get 200 people or so, aren't there because you can't do teams on online. So there's two less RPTQs, and all of them are capping out. And only two teams from each RPTQ qualify.
Yeah, I wanted to bring this discussion up just a little bit, just because it kind of fits into this narrative of like kind of what's wrong with the Pro Tour. Just this whole system, I've just been off it since the beginning. I haven't played in one PPPTQ. Well, I can never even say it. That's part of the problem. The branding is just like awful as well. I don't know. I can't offer any solutions, so it's hard for me to just keep ragging on it all the time. But it just seems like it's been just a pain for players. It seems like, and not to say we need to do the old system, because the old system also had a little bit of flaws, I know, but some players still had kind of a nostalgic feeling to it. Because they like going to the one, winner takes all. They like seeing their friends at different PTQs all over the place. So I can definitely see the appeal of it. I mean, I even played in, I want to say two or three PTQs. But since then, no. I just have no interest.
It's become a real grind. And I think the word disconnect is really true, especially small countries like Ireland. I know multiple people who are competitive or competitive-ish, and they're just like, I got to play so many events before I even get a sniff at qualifying. Where it used to be, well, if I'm at this event, I got a chip in a chair, like old PTQs, I got a chip in a chair, and I'm going to try my best, you know? I've become very disillusioned by it, and I'm the high-end, competitive, go-to-GP, go-grind-out-these-events person. I don't know what the fix is. I think your icon in the old system isn't good either. I think the fix is making the Pro Tour twice as big, so it's easier to qualify for, but that's not something they want to do, and not something they're willing to do. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, Jerry recommended that, or Jerry mentioned that on the game podcast last week. They were kind of talking about the same issue. One of the big things was, make Pro Tours almost like GP events, and then have Worlds kind of like your Pro Tour then.
Perfect, So one of the excuses they've given, because I've seen this asked to a couple higher-ups, is why don't you just make the Pro Tour bigger? One of the answers they can't give is money. They don't want to pay extra airfare for that many pros, essentially.
Yep, which is a problem, for sure.
Which is that's a huge expense. Don't underestimate how much that costs, anyone listening. That is a massive expense for them. But a really big issue is they say that they want the Pro Tour to be consistent, and they want high-level players to continuously get paid off. And if you add a massive amount of people to the Pro Tour, you are also adding variance. You need better records. There has to maybe be more rounds. I don't know the maths behind that. And you will see the top players on top less. That's one of their excuses for, you know, the promotion of the game. Because whether they admit it or not, pros are good for them. LSVs are good for them because they're big promotion for their game at the end of the day. But with events like Worlds and the World Championship, and like there's now they're making teams a thing, and they could even have that as a separate, the Team World Championship event to re-marquee the pro players. I think the Pro Tour should just be bigger and invite more players and be a bigger goal for people like me to invest more time and money into Magic, and that would be better. But something has to happen. I don't think the current system is working at all.
All right, Dave, well, you talk about the team series in particular. I have to update our fantasy team series stats, and this might be the last time we update it because this is kind of the last Pro Tour it's going to go, because I think there's like a cutoff. Only like the top 16 teams get qualified for the next Pro Tour, so I think that's the only thing that really matters. So a lot of the bottom teams will not have likely have less qualifications, as far as I'm understanding. Is that correct?
Yeah, so...
I'm always so confused.
Right. I mean, anybody that's qualified on the other teams, right, is qualified. But regardless of whether or not you've qualified via Grand Prix or pro status or whatever, if your team is currently in the top 16 of the pro player series, then your entire team, all six players, I think are qualified for the next Pro Tour. So that's a huge advantage for teams like, say, Cardholder didn't make the top 16, but for our team, where not all of our players are qualified sort of thing, it's an advantage. But some of the big teams, you know, they're already qualified anyway, so it's sort of irrelevant.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
it's nice though that they could like spike it, right? So randomly a Cardholder guy could have come second or whatever and gobbled up a bunch of pro points and all of a sudden jumped into top 16.
Yeah, and then the other five or whoever wasn't qualified is instantly qualified. That's cool. That would be cool. I don't know. Yeah. I assume there's some teams that happen for, but you know, I'm not really sure. I haven't really looked at those numbers.
Sure. Yeah, the race between our fantasy teams actually got pretty close. I think it's the same as last time around, though. So, Dave, you're still in the lead here with a total of 289. Most of your teams just pretty much had middling finishes. I think, like, each of your teams got around, like, 20, 15 kind of points. So, solid finishes for each of your teams. Nathaniel had the biggest team with Ultimate Guard. Huge performance because Owen, of course, top eight. They're actually the number one team with 153 points. It's a lot. But so Nathaniel's only behind by a couple, 273 so, with Dave's 289. And I'm bringing it up the rear with 264. My man, Channel Fireball just not pulling weight this time around. No. Genesis with a decent performance. So, yep, actually pretty close fantasy league that we got going here.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well, Channel Fireball had their whole... that whole debacle or whatever you want to call it with the deck lists being published.
Yeah. Dave, do you want to close us out with some nerd drama here?
Well, essentially, I didn't see the graphic myself, so I was really surprised when I saw it tweeted out, but Channel Fireball's entire deck was spoiled before anyone had seen it, before the Constructed had started. I think it just came up in those graphics, which is like someone's deck, and their deck accidentally got mixed into them when they're supposed to just be Modo decks. They complained, and there was a lot of huffing and puffing, but essentially, the people who made the mistake were super apologetic, and it was never meant to happen like that. It started the age-old debate, should decks be revealed before the tournament? My answer is definitely not, because it stops people from playing, like, sweet things or sweet sideboard strategies. Yeah, it was really crummy on them. I hope they didn't lose any games because of it, but as a couple of the pros said, they don't even check coverage, so they only heard about it after the day had finished, which is, it's not as important at that stage.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I heard that there's Hearthstone tournaments now where everybody has deck lists, which, yeah, it has to be so lame.
Yeah, it does. It stops innovation, but I guess the way Hearthstone's laid out, it forces you to play multiple decks in their tournament structure. So while it can get stale, they're like, here's five decks. You get to ban one of my decks, and then we're going to play until one of us wins three games or whatever it is, or it's like six decks you bring. So there's always going to be some variety in Hearthstone.
Okay.
And you don't want to give people an excuse not to be on coverage, because with Hearthstone, matchups come down to a lot to, I know your entire list, I have an advantage because you're playing this legendary guy instead of this legendary guy, so you lose to certain cards. Like, it's way more like limited, where knowing your opponent's whole deck can actually come up a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much nothing else to report really from this tournament. I didn't really hear anything drama wise as far as DQs. I mean, the last final attack was kind of somewhat controversial. People were talking about it, but it's not really anything that was controversial compared to past pro tours.
Yeah, you could argue it's angle shooting, but that it gets into a lot of semantics. And the problem with this coverage, and I've said this about SCG coverage, where people are accused of angle shooting or being a bit crappy, we can't always hear how the players communicate. And maybe there was a miscommunication.
Well, the head judge basically said no, it wasn't. So I think that's enough to sort of stop that discussion. But who knows?
Yeah, shout out to Ricky Hayashi. He's a great guy, by the way.
He is a really great guy. He's done some really great articles for Channel Fireball. Anyone who thinks chess cocks would work in Magic, go read one of his articles from, I think it's 8 years ago, that just categorically proves they can't work.
He used to write for CFB? Because I worked with him at Star City. Huh.
Yeah, Ricky used to write for CFB. As far as
I
know. I
didn't know that.
Unless I'm getting confused with a Star City article, but I'm pretty sure it was CFB.
Yeah, it's possible. He actually used to commentate a little bit when I was at Star City, too. Great guy.
Yeah, really great guy.
All right, well, let's move away from the Pro Tour and go to our wheelhouse. As Nathaniel likes to say, let's go over to Magic Online, Magic Online News. So today, a Tumblr post got released, and I didn't include this in the show notes because it just recently came out. BattleBond cards coming July 5th during the downtime for the M19 release. And most notably for me, Brightlane, the mono white card, is included, so I might try it out in Legacy, Death and Taxes. I don't know if it's going to be great. Some people said there's no reason for it to try it, but I think it's worth trying out, so I will.
There's always a reason to try it. There might be no reason to play it in the end, but there's always a reason to try it.
Well, a lot of the other cards that people are like, oh, this card's finally going to make Death and Taxes good. I'm like, this is this card, I'm like, okay. I can see applications for this, so I definitely want to try it out. Interesting enough, in this little article here, changes in Brawl shifted developer resources away from BattleBond, so they're hoping to allocate resources back to more BattleBond cards, because apparently they did not get to code all the cards that they wanted to, and it sounds like it's not going to happen until the next few release cycles after M19. And one card they specifically said, Spellseeker, is a high priority for the first release after M19. And hopefully it's not a huge player in the Legacy format, since the Expert Tour is Team Trios with Legacy. That would be really awkward if it was. I don't think it's going to be a good card, though, so I don't think we have to worry. But this is really interesting stuff that they would take resources away. So
it was it's interesting seeing that resource allocation, like the discussion about it. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that, have we?
I'm sure that it's happened. We just don't get told about it, probably.
Oh, it absolutely happens, but it's interesting to kind of get that perspective and maybe get that notion that, well, maybe we need to have more resources available to Magic Online. But
yeah,
that's
that's basically on the discussion that we're going to go to, because Lee Sharp is leaving Magic Online. And when I saw Saffron Olive's tweet about this, I actually had a moment where I thought, oh no, did we get Lee Sharp fired?
What did I say?
The way he wrote the tweet, I was like, oh, he got fired? Oh no. But no, not the case. He's moving over to Arena. Yeah, that's a big change. And we're wondering if this is just this narrative that we're creative. Oh, a bunch of things are being taken away from Magic Online over to Arena. But I'm not sure what to make of this.
They did move some people over to take his spot with Lee. What's the person's name? He used to be in R&D.
Oh, well, Allie, she got put in Lee's
spot. Yeah, I thought Allie got
spot.
Yeah, but then they moved they moved someone to Allie's spot, right, from R&D.
Right. Oh, okay. I'm sure they didn't just, like, remove Lee's position from existing. I saw Lee's tweet. It's surprising, I think. We knew that he was working on Arena to a certain capacity, both Arena and MTGO, so I'm not sure what his time split was. And when he was with us, he sort of described it in terms of his involvement with Arena. You want to have someone that knows what's happening with Magic Online, which I think is right and made sense. So I don't know if they'll have that sort of dual person. I don't know if Allie's going to do some stuff for Arena as well, so they have that. But some people were asking me if this was concerning. And I wasn't sure. It definitely, there could be a million reasons why, Lee could have preferred it, personally. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be just like Watsy making a change. So I don't know that it's bad news for Magic Online, though it does potentially sort of spell that sort of resource allocation away from Magic Online, which I think has probably been happening for a while. I'm not like immediately concerned. I mean, happy for Lee. He sounded happy for what I assume is a promotion of some type. So congrats to him. But for Magic Online, it's definitely not good. I don't think it's good news, but it might not be bad news either. It's really hard to know without getting more information, which we'll basically never receive probably.
Yeah, it always seemed Lee was good in his position. And, he was obviously awesome and answered a lot of questions really well on the cast. He was really good on Twitter. I think he was really good with handling the public, which seems like a really tough element of his job. So it is a loss for Magic Online. Hopefully Ali is just as good as him. And I wish him the absolute best in his Arena endeavors.
And I know that Chris Kiritz is still around as well. And he's, I don't know how he falls in the hierarchy, but he was just less outspoken on stuff that we see, like on Twitter. But when I went to WotC, I met him as well. So I think there's someone near the helm. I don't know if they're at the helm. It's always been unclear exactly who's at the helm of Magic Online. But so there is still that. But it may be that it becomes slightly less accessible, though I do know that Allie is on Twitter. I haven't really had much interaction, so I don't know the type of personality and the forthrightness that we can expect. But Lee had a lot of that, just like Worth did as well prior to him. So transitioning from Worth to Lee, I think, was pretty seamless, at least from the public's perspective. There's lots that goes on behind the scene that we have no idea. So it will be interesting to see if that sort of transparency and openness and availability will be continued with the change.
For sure. But BattleBond and Lee Sharp going over to Arena. Funny how both of those kind of happened at the same times. But as Lee moves over to Arena, we will do the same because there's actually a big change coming June 7th. Arena will have full standards. So Kaladesh and Aether Revolt will be coming to Arena. Each account will receive one of each rare and mythic, two of each uncommon and uncommon. And most notably, everybody was going to get a playset of, I'm not going to read all of them, but most notably, Aether Hub, Aether Sphere Harvester, Bomad Courier, Chandra, Fatal Push, Heart of Kieran, Walking Ballista, and Scrap Heat Scrounger, and several other standard staples. I'll leave a link to the video in the show notes. It has the graphic of the 15 cards. You'll get a play set up. So, two other big changes. Best of three matches with Cyborg incoming. Hooray, real magic. And my favorite, drafting, will be all week instead of just on the weekends. I think they said they're going to shift which format each week. I think that's how they're going to do it. But big update, guys. What are you most surprised with?
Just all of it. I genuinely thought they were never going to put energy on it. I thought energy might be a bit of a stretched program, and they're just going to wait for that set. Like most of us are waiting for that set. I thought they were also going to wait for that set to rotate out of standard before putting full standard on. But this is huge. This is the turning point, and we're going to find out a lot about Arena's future. I also saw an email going up that at the same time, anyone that hasn't has got their Arena code yet, to contact them. Now, I don't know if that means everyone's going to get their codes that has asked for them before, but that might mean a huge influx of players as well. So full standard, drafts anytime, huge influx of players. We're going to see what Arena's all about in the next coming months, I think.
I don't think any of it is really that surprising. The only surprising thing might be the timing, I suppose, depending on your perspective. But I think we were anticipating these things to happen on Arena. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether it changes people's opinions. You know, a lot of the discussion that I've read has been about the economy and, you know, whether or not it's going to be good enough for the, you know, the people that want to play for free and that sort of thing. I doubt you're going to get this sort of giveaway ever again or whatever, but I don't even know what happens when they reset collections. I guess it becomes irrelevant again. Yeah, I think it's the right thing to do for them to try to get more bodies onto Arena and to get the stress testing that they need to do. And I understand why people are excited and think it's, you know, very momentous, because I think it is. It's a lot of stuff that you sort of need to have to make it, to make Arena work, though I don't think any of it's particularly surprising. Maybe giving away those cards so people don't have to grind it out is somewhat surprising, and it probably sets a bad precedent, since I doubt they'll do it again. But hey, it's probably the right thing to do for now.
I'm with Dave here for sure. I think it's really surprising that they put the whole standard on here. I think that's the most surprising for sure, just because now players can actually, they can test on Arena now for the next Pro Tour. I mean, it's, well, it depends on when they bring out the new core set cards on there. Yeah, players can now play standard on Arena, which is, I didn't think it was actually going to happen. I thought they wanted to keep the two separate, make sure that didn't happen. So Magic Online always had its audience. So I can't wait to see if the numbers are really affected on Magic Online in the next few weeks just because of this. Draft might not just do anything, at least for now, because it's not a great draft. Or I should say, it's not the true draft experience, because you're still drafting with AI, so we're still going through that song and dance.
Yeah, it's just fun to watch draft, though, is a big thing. So a perspective of mine is, how is this going to affect viewing numbers on Twitch? And already there's a lot of big Arena streamers taking over, and everyone's trying Arena, because the cap to people watching Arena is way higher than Magic Online. We already know what the cap of Magic Online. You know, we have four or five very big streamers, LSV and Newmont, and sometimes Caleb get 1,000 people, but people don't get many more than that. We don't know what the cap on Arena is, and there's a lot of space to explore that. It also seems a bit more of a casual market than Magic Online. So now we really get to see, and we get to see how many hardcore Magic Online viewers might switch over to Arena, because there's full standard decks. I've a lot of my old viewers, I would say, because they might watch me as much now because I'm streaming Arena, said, you know, I don't want to watch or I don't want to play until I can play proper standard.
How does one play? Like, there's no events, right? Would you just challenge a buddy or something?
Well, so there is a quote-unquote event that you can put a certain amount of gold into. It's called Quick Constructed, and in the video they said that's been going well. And you play a bunch of one-off games. I think they're keeping them to one-off. They're not going to become best 3 out of 2 yet. And you have 3 losses to give. And for every win you get additional prizes. So exactly like the Hearthstone kind of ladder system.
Is that the 7-win thing that I've seen you tweet about?
Yeah, the 7-win thing. It's the same in Limited. And then if you get the 7th win, you know, you stop playing and you get a bunch of prizes. Usually it's been, I think, for Constructed, it's 5 wins you break even. And then for Draft, it's like 6 you make a profit, but 5 you would make a loss kind of way. So you can do them, and that's usually what I do to build up some gold. Or you can just do what's called ranked play, and the only... you don't put any money up for that. It's free. You play against a random person around your rank, and if you win, you go up ranks. There's no actual rank as in first, second, third in the world at the moment, but it's bronze, silver, gold, platinum, and stuff like that. And you,
I believe in the video too, they said they were going to be updating that a little bit to make it a little bit more, a better ranking system to understand it a little easier.
Yeah, they should just put numbers on it eventually. Like, the Hearthstone one is perfect. You're just climbing up numbers. So from rank 25, you work all the way to rank 1. And then when you're past rank 1, you're on, like, an ELO board. And then you're playing for ELO points and seeing who can be best in the world by the end of the month. That creates a lot of competition, and a lot of people want to be what's called legendary status. So that's beyond rank 1. And I think they should just implement that.
Have you seen any issues like you do on Magic Online when there's nothing at stake? And the types of games you have or the types of experiences you run into?
Like people just messing about and trying to tilt you?
Yeah, or just like, yeah, or just not, or just quitting immediately or whatever.
Well, the quit immediately doesn't affect you as badly, because if you quit immediately, you can be in another free game within 10 seconds. So I don't think that's too bad. I've heard of people just roping people. And what roping people means is when you know you lose the game, instead of conceding, when you don't take an action for a certain amount of seconds, a timer starts. And you can have a few of the timers saved up if the game was longer. And if you don't make an action, your timer breaks. And it's like, you've used a timeout. And once you've used all your timeouts, it will just start auto-passing your turns. But if I've built up, you can build up timeouts. I think it's every 3 turns that you play quickly, you get like another timeout. So if you build up timeouts and then you're bitter at the end of the game, you can just make someone wait for a very long time for their win. And that's a problem that they probably have to address eventually. Hearthstone have that addressed where if the rope comes down, which is you only have X amount of time to play a turn in Hearthstone, if the rope burns out, you pass the turn, even if you're still trying to make a play. But if people disconnect or just aren't making plays, when it goes to your next turn, instead of getting your time to make your turn, the rope automatically comes down and is faster this time to make sure disconnected people or people aren't just rage tilting and making people wait, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, I was more asking those questions because I understand that the sort of ladder ranking would have, I guess, some prestige, but I don't know that, like, serious players really care about that. So I just, the whole, like, what are you playing for? And can you have an actual environment where you can test decks as well is sort of my question. But it sounds like we'll see if it is the same level of play, but I think it would be surprising if it is.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's probably too early to tell, but I think it will be. I'm not sure about like the top players, but definitely streamers and online players will definitely use it as a resource like that.
I think it could. I think one big thing as well is a lot of people playing at the moment. There are some high-level people, but mostly it's going to be people enjoying a beta and just enjoying the game. I think until it's out of beta or an open beta, we won't see how many people are just like grinding it competitively.
Right, and that's a big thing with me. For myself, I've just been enjoying the game. And I've actually, since Dominaria's been out, I've actually liked it a lot. Because they made a few subtle changes that I've definitely enjoyed. I definitely agree with you, Dave, though. The time really, really needs to be improved on. I'm hoping they make changes at some point. And of course, I still don't like how the meta taps. But those are things they can easily fix at some point. But other than that, I've had a lot of fun with the game. Dave, how have you been so far with the game?
As I said, I'm in summer mode. And in general, I'm just trying to be out of my house and get a couple things done. I become a complete teenager. I'm back in the gym. I'm trying to get a tattoo. I'm running around in fields, so I haven't played as much. But I've been enjoying it. As I said, there's still problems with the economy and only being able to have one deck realistically with the amount I've played means that I'm playing less, because the nice positive thing about it is you go through games pretty fast. But if I go through 10 games and I'm not gaining anything, or I'm gaining a little bit of gold to draft in the weekend, I'm kind of like, this is starting to feel like a chore. So hopefully the economy improves a bit, which it's a lot to get into depth to now. But if that improves and I can get a couple more decks, I am enjoying it. I am enjoying the system, and I think it has a lot to offer.
Okay. Well, I think the big difference now going forward is draft is going to be more readily available. So I think that's the big thing that we need to look out for. I will be drafting a lot more. You get to keep the cards, as far as I know. So collections, my collection should be building up a lot more instead of just me opening a Dominaria pack once a week.
So yeah.
I think it's going to go up a little bit farther than that. I can finally open some better cards than all the junk rares I've been opening.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
There's still a lot of unknown, but I think people have this fantasy about what it can be, and I don't think it's very realistic. So, I mean, time will tell, but we'll see.
The main one is still, it's a big feel bad to have a bunch of mythics in my collection that I know I'm never going to use because they're not good and I can't do anything with them. And I think they've said multiple times they don't want to be like Hearthstone and have a dusting system or a junking system or whatever you want to call it. But it feels real bad looking at my collection going, well, there, I have one mythic I am going to use and here's 22 that I'm not and I can't do anything with them. So I think they need to... I don't care if I had to trade in 8 of them, but I want to be able to trade in some amount for a new mythic.
All right, well, we'll see how it goes. I will definitely be playing some draft on Arena. I'll be transitioning away from Magic Online, especially if they'll be bringing back some older formats too, so that's going to be kind of fun. Draft some... That'd be awesome if they brought back Kaladesh draft. That would be so sweet. I would definitely draft the hell out of that. But like Aether Revolt. Not Aether Revolt, I'm sorry. Amonkhet and what's Hour Devastation.
They had that a week or two ago. It was great.
So, Dave, take it away with our Card Hoarder After Dark segment.
We're listening in on radio.
Welcome to Card Hoarder After Dark, your one-stop radio station for all mature and adult content. I am your DJ, Dave C, and today's mature topic will be your favorite and least favorite Pro Tours. We're talking about coverage and its shortcomings maybe in the last week, but what has your favorite and least favorite Pro Tour been? Connor, I'll throw it over to you for yours.
Do you want me to give you both of them, or do you want me to just do favorite first?
Let's start. We want to end the podcast on a positive, so let's start with a negative. What was your least favorite one, Connor?
I've mentioned this on the cast a ton of times, so hardcore listeners of the cast will not be surprised with my answer. But Pro Tour Return to Ravnica. That was the bottom Pro Tour where Stanislaw Sitka won with eggs. That was the old eggs Pro Tour where you beat Watanabe and it was playing Jund. I just remember it was the first Pro Tour coming into the game where I was actively bored and I just turned it off in the finals because I was so bored with knowing that this broken deck was just going to win and easily win. Although it was a little closer than I give it credit for, but the games were just not interesting. That was another Pro Tour that was just run by Jund because I know Deathrite Shaman was the huge breakout card of that tournament, so I do not have fond memories of that tournament.
Yeah, it's a weird deck where technically, maybe power level wise, it's probably maybe even fine in current Magic, in current Modern. But in a live event, I will have to take a 15 to 20 minute turn at some stage in some of these scenarios. That is not fun. That is mind-numbing. Was that the PT where someone walks away from the table? Does Kibler leave the F6?
That was at a GP.
Oh, that was a GP, yeah.
I wouldn't say this Pro Tour was like the worst of, like the metagame was the worst or anything like that, but just the top 8 being such a lull, I was like, oh, Pro Tours aren't always amazing. Because before this, it was like Pro Tours were just like rapid fire amazing. This was the first one. I was like, oh, that's kind of a letdown. PT, Return to Ravnica. I will never like you.
Nathaniel, do you have a least favorite Pro Tour or one, yeah, one you just hated in general?
Yeah, I guess it is Eldrazi Winter. I think that was a Pro Tour, right?
Yes, that was the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, it was like...
It was a season.
right. Because I remember there was Grand Prix. I couldn't remember for sure that it was a Pro Tour. But now that I'm thinking about it, like I do recall like the blue-red one. I mean, sort of interesting to see how dominating this deck was. And like it, like obviously, the format was busted, which I think was expected. But after the initial excitement of that wore off, I think it quickly became super boring and uninteresting. So definitely among the worst that I can think of.
Ooh, two modern Pro Tours. Is Dave gonna get the trifecta here?
Unfortunately, they were both mine. Just give me a second.
Really?
Yeah, they were both. Both of them were mine.
Wow.
Yeah. In general, modern ones are my least favorite because they get broken most, right? So it's nice when there's a breakout deck, but it's horrible when that deck is the only deck, and it's kind of obvious. I had Eldrazi Winter as like my top one, and Connor's second, because that one's annoying, but the Eldrazi Winter one, people were warning Wizards it was going to happen. They didn't have it exactly broken. You know, they didn't know exactly how, because there was a couple different variations in the list. But people were like, if they don't ban these lands, the Pro Tour is going to be crap. And it was crap. It's hard to remember one I hate worse than Eldrazi Winter, but it's probably like all the modern ones. Anytime Pod and Splinter Twin were both playable was horrible to watch, I think.
There was one that I remember, Amulet Bloom, was being piloted by like two or three players. I remember that Pro Tour being okay.
Yeah, I thought that one was fine. Yeah. The finals between Jacob Wilson and, what's the Canadian Magic player's name? He's like the loner that...
Sean McLaren.
He hasn't shown up. Sean McLaren, that was the one he won. I thought that finals was fantastic.
Something about that finals, and we're going to get onto favorite Pro Tours, and this probably has an element in a lot of our favorite Pro Tours, is that finals had a story. They made that finals about Sean McLaren, Lone Wolf, no team, against Jacob Wilson, Wunderkind. You know, they put a lot into the stories and the people running up to that, and that's why I always think Pro Tours should be about people and not cards.
I definitely agree. But I thought the gameplay was also fun. At least that matchup, it was control against Pod. So say I like Pod as a deck. I'm glad that deck is not a thing anymore. But yeah, some modern Pro Tours, I think we've said that before. It's just high variance format to have as a PT format. But I thought the last modern Pro Tour was also, you know, the most recent one. 8 different decks. I thought it was a good Pro Tour.
That was interesting. I'm not a big fan of the deck that won. I'm not a big fan of Mox Opal existing. But that was watchable and had a couple good storylines running through it. What's your favorite Pro Tour, Connor?
I initially almost said PT Paris, which was because it was like a Pro Tour that broke Magic. What Pro Tour did the teams break it? And it always goes to Paris. So that's when Callblade was kind of created. But no, I'm not going to go to that one. That was my first Pro Tour where I got like back into the game, watched it live, and have a lot of memories watching it. But Pro Tour Dark Ascension was definitely the one. It had the Brian Kibler versus John Finkel legendary match. And I just, that was, again, around Innistrad, Dark Ascension just came out. So loved all the cards and Brian Kibler winning. Also, fun story. Although the finals was terrible, but still, I love that format and I love that match. It was just so much hype. It was one of those matches like, no, I can't eat dinner right now. I need to watch this match of Magic. Since that match, I don't think I've had that feeling about a match of Magic.
How about you, Nathaniel? Do you have a favorite Pro Tour?
I don't think I have a specific favorite one, but I think back in the day, I'll just vaguely say back in the day, like Kai was my favorite player for a long time. Back when I was like seriously trying to get on the Pro Tour, and I did play a Pro Tour. I could say it's my favorite in the sense that I made the Pro Tour, but it was extended and it didn't exist on Magic Online, so it wasn't that fun for me. But back, I think it was like onslaught block era, give or take a block, when Kai went on that run and he won what, like 3 Pro Tours in like 2 years or something like that.
Three out of 4 Pro Tours, I think.
Oh, 3 out of 4 in 1 year, which is just insane. And like he was just so much better than everybody else, it seemed like. It was pretty cool. And I think one of those Pro Tours was actually in Boston, so I got to watch some of it in person. So like that era, definitely, at least, I mean, it could just be nostalgia talking though, you know, but, I like the Pro Tour just generally these days, but you know, we've had issues with the coverage and whatever. But I do like to watch it. So I still like it, but I think my favorite is sort of the Kai Bud era of just complete and utter dominance, which I think has happened other times throughout Magic history, but not when I was paying as much attention. So I happen to be paying as much attention during his run. It's sort of my nostalgic favorite era.
I'm a Kai fanboy for sure. No one's ever been that dominant. There's been people that have made a lot of pro tours, top eights in 1 year, but no one's won that many in that short of a span. It's really insane. My favorite one though is a weird one, but Worlds 2011. I remember being glued to that. Back when Worlds was essentially a pro tour, not the current world system we have. And Team Channel Fireball kind of broke the format, and they didn't think too far out of the way. They went with a kind of blue-white, I want to say Affinity, but there's no Affinity cards in it, Robots deck in Standard, the Tempered Steel deck.
The Tempered Steel deck, yeah.
Yeah, and people knew about it, they just didn't think it was very good, and Channel Fireball showed up with this list that was very good, and they dominated. They put Joshua DeLayton, LSV, Paolo, and Conley Woods in the top eight. And Conley Woods, before this, had been known as the Jank Master, and he never played his team's deck. He always had acidic slime combo decks, and if you watch his stream now, it's still the same. He just brought his own thing and attacked from different angles. But all of a sudden, there was this story arc, not only the dominance of Channel Fireball, and a deck that wasn't broken, but was tuned so well that they, you know, surprised the metagame, essentially. Conley Woods turned into the most serious player of all time. Because there's jokes, there's in-jokes about Conley, and there's like this story that he lost to a mulligan to two against a red deck, which has been over-exaggerated over the years. And he was always poked fun at a bit of the team, even though he was great because of his tendencies to play these decks. But all of a sudden, he played the team's deck because it was broken, and he played it superbly. And no one had ever seen him in that light before, and Conley Woods all of a sudden got into serious mode and played like he was one of the best players in the world, and that was awesome. And it was this transformation and this excellent storyline. And he only lost to the eventual winner, and I'm going to butcher the name, but Junya Ayanga.
Iyanaga.
I think it's Iyanaga. Iyanaga, thank you. And his deck was basically designed to beat their style of deck. It was just all like main deck artifact hate and main deck sweepers, and they could never even get close to winning a game. And Conley still made lines to almost win a bunch of those games.
Yeah, that was a great matchup between Conley and Craig Wesco. Their quarterfinals match. If you want to watch an awesome match of Magic, so watch good. That one.
Most games of Magic, you can look at both players' hands and you can say, I know who's probably going to win this within a couple turns of the game, unless they draw X or I know what they need to draw. Conley Woods genuinely surprised me with 90% of his plays, and they were all correct. I was just wrong. And spoilers, he does pretty well in those games.
Yeah, that was the interesting tournament too, because that was the birth of the ramp deck, the Wolf Run ramp. I mean, yeah. It existed in other shells before, but that was like the standard play eight Titans, like, because I think other decks only played like a couple of Primevals, maybe one or two Infernos or something like that, which was like completely wrong. And then he just like broke the format. Like, here's what you're supposed to do. Jam all the Titans, all the sweepers, and just get them.
Yeah, genuinely, just get the six mana. All these cards are broken and should never have been printed. Cast one of them.
Yep, good times. Honorable mention to me, I think it's Worlds, I don't know if it's 2005 or 06, whichever one, Ignite Memories with Patrick Chapin and Gabriel Mussi.
I think that's Paris. I think I was at that one.
Yep.
That was a really cool event to be at as well. So that's one of my favorites also.
Yep, that and Kyoto with Nassif called shot. That was also another. I've watched that top eight a bunch of times as well. Yep, good times. Always fun to watch old pro tours and just see how different the game has been and what the players are playing and see which players were dominant during that era. So always a lot of fun watching old pro tour matches. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget about Magic Online events available this week. We have Battle of the Plains is back this week, followed by Vintage Cube. And for premier events, Standard Mox Monthly on Saturday and Sealed Mox Monthly on Sunday. For context, hit me up on Twitter at Connor P. O'Donnell, or check out the other podcasts I work on, The Game Podcast with Jerry Thompson and Brian Gottlieb, WCW versus NWO Podcast, the wrestling podcast Dave and I do. We just released our Spring Stampede 1997 episode, so please go check that out. Dave, Nathaniel, where can our listeners contact you guys?
They can find me on Twitter. I'm Dave C. Dare. Rant about anything magical at me. I'm also streaming Twitch, streaming out of Arena recently. Maybe I'll move to a bit of modern or a bit of standard testing because I got an RPDQ coming up. I'm Dave C. there, streaming typically 5 days a week, a couple hours in the mornings.
For me, at Card Hoarder on Twitter is typically me replying. And if you'd like to have a lengthier discussion, Nathaniel at cardhoarder.com. The email is typically the best.
Well, that will wrap up this episode. Remember, you can find the show on cardholder.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.